You're listening to Innovation for Alpha, where we explore everything at the intersection of healthcare innovation and finance. Through our discussions and interviews, we keep you informed and educated about healthcare innovations, next-level venture investing, and everything involving the combination of the two.
Hi, everybody. This is Tobin Arthur with the Innovation for Alpha podcast, and we are glad that you're here with us today. I'm here with a terrific guest, Dr. Jeff Colby, who is an incredible guy. He's a real key contributor to the AngelMD community as one of the chairs of our neurosurgery clinical advisory board, and is constantly offering great ideas about how to build and fortify the community. So we're real fortunate, Dr. Colby, to have you here with us today. Welcome.
Wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me, Tobin.
Well, you know, tell us just a little bit about yourself. For those who are not familiar, talk about what your role is, what you do, you know, at UCLA, and just give them some context.
Sure. So my general career is as a neurosurgeon, and I have subspecialty training and subspecialty expertise as a cerebrovascular neurosurgeon. So I'm taking care of patients with problems of blood vessels of the brain and spine. But I had a long pathway into medicine. Started off with a significant interest in research. I did a lot of research during college where I was going to school in New York City. I then transitioned to medical school, actually going for a combined MD and PhD degree. So I was interested in not just taking care of patients, but also performing high quality research. And I went through a couple different iterations of what I wanted to do from a medical standpoint, and ultimately wound up loving anatomy and how the body's made and how the body works. And that really got me into surgical subspecialties, and love working with my hands and making an immediate difference and immediate impact. And that combined with an interest in neuroscience drove me to the field of neurosurgery. And I've been there ever since, and very happy to be in this space, as it's fascinating, it's hands-on, it's technology-driven, research-driven, and really a part of the body that we understand a lot, but we also don't understand a lot. So there's a lot of work and a lot of novel things to be discovered in the future. So
that's an incredible combination. I want to come back to the present, but just real quickly, going back, you know, at what point was it in high school or even younger, but what point did you say, hey, I'm interested in the sciences and or medicine? And then as you indicated, as you got into school, it sounds like maybe you were thinking, you know, the science and the research angle and added the medical later, but how did that all evolve? Just curious.
Yeah, so great question. I went through, I'd say, a variety of different iterations in what I thought I wanted to be as I grew up. I did have some positive influence from my family. There are some physicians actually primarily on one side of my family, but I had a positive influence from my father, as well as some other physicians on his side of the family. So I guess I was always exposed to medicine growing up, but I thought about other things. I thought about finance. I thought about music. And at one point, I wanted to be a rock star. That obviously didn't, you know, pan itself out. So
it's never too late.
Yeah, never too late. But I did think about other careers and other professions. But ultimately, I was very good at science, very good at math. I loved biology. I loved how the body worked, and that's what drove me into medicine.
How did you get to UCLA? What was the pathway there?
Yeah, so I'm for the most part, Southern California native. Although I spent a lot of time on the East Coast for school and my training. And I was a faculty over at Johns Hopkins for several years. And there was an interesting opportunity to come back to Southern California and do the things that I trained to do and that I love to do. And I jumped on that opportunity, and I've joined a really wonderful department of neurosurgery here at UCLA, a group of high quality individuals and outstanding clinicians and scientists. And I'm very happy to be here.
Talk a little bit about the combination. So between research and clinical, how does that look in a day-to-day basis for people not familiar with how that goes down?
I'd say it's a little bit different for everybody who's in this field. Some people do all of one or all of another. And for myself, I do a lot of clinical work. So I see a lot of patients, I do a lot of procedures. I feel that in order to truly have an up-to-date skill set and be able to offer patients the, you know, the high quality surgeries that you are trained to do, you need high volume. So I do a lot of that. On the research side, that can be quite variable, and there might be ups and downs as far as how much involvement I have at any given point, depending on what projects I'm involved in. But it's a little bit different for everybody. And there's also a teaching component to the things that we do at academic institutions. So we kind of hit the three pillars of clinical activity, research, and teaching at academic centers.
Do you still publish and spend time doing that?
Yeah, so that's a part of being in the field. There's the kind of the classic phrase of publish or perish. So we still publish, and that's a way of, you know, getting your work out there and keeping fresh from a scientific standpoint. So yeah, still involved.
So what are the clinical and or research things, you know, problems that you enjoy working on that are challenging, you know, that maybe aren't necessarily the high volume ones that you can just crank out because you've done so many of them? What are the big challenges for you?
So from the clinical standpoint, you know, I spend a lot of my time treating blood vessel problems of the brain. And I'd say in particular, problems such as aneurysms and other vascular pathologies. And a lot of my clinical-based research has revolved around that. So novel treatments of aneurysms or being involved in assembling series of new treatments and what the outcomes are and how patients do or what kind of new technical skills we can do to improve patient outcomes. And that's where a lot of my research has been. But over the years, I've also been involved in basic science and translational research, and currently involved in projects looking at treating patients for various types of problems that they have after a brain aneurysm ruptures or breaks. And I'd say now I'm involved in a fair amount of clinical work as well as translational work.
I think I mentioned a while back, ironically, I had experience through my brother. The brother that's just youngest to me had a complex aneurysm years and years ago. And of all places, he was taken to UCLA from Colorado. They felt like that was the best place in the world for what he had at the time. And all everything turned out fabulously well, although it was an incredible process. It ended up being several, it was over a month because the first surgery didn't take. The lead surgeon ended up having to leave the country. And so he wasn't available to do the follow-up. And so his second in command took over, and it was one of those surgeries where there were, you know, tons of industry people flown in from all over the world to watch it. It was, you know, at the time in the being in the middle of that as a family member, not necessarily great, but the outcome was great. But speaking of aneurysms, just for people not super familiar with aneurysms, so if an aneurysm does erupt, I mean, what are the percentages of time when, you know, that's it, that patient's not going to survive, or are they more survivable today than they were 10 years ago? I mean, what has evolved in that space over time, and what's the prognosis in most cases?
Yeah. So, you know, great questions. You know, aneurysms, I would start off by saying aneurysms are more common than people think. There's a lot of literature out there about who has aneurysms, who don't, which ones we care about, when do we treat, when do we not treat. About 1 in 50 to 1 in 100 people have an aneurysm. And a lot of people just don't know they have it because a lot of times they don't cause problems. But when they do cause problems, they can cause very large problems and issues. And to speak to your question specifically, the numbers vary a little bit in the scientific literature, but the general feeling is that somewhere between 15 to 30% or so of people who have a ruptured aneurysm, unfortunately, don't survive that event. And about half of the survivors, or over half of the survivors, have some sort of, you know, permanent neurological complication as a result of the aneurysm breaking. So we like to get to the aneurysms before they rupture, because that's our best chance at giving a person a normal life and hopefully relieving them of the anxiety of having an aneurysm. But if the aneurysm does break, there's a lot of things we do. There's a lot of treatments that we offer from the medical standpoint and the surgical standpoint. And it's really dealing with the blood in the head and all the complications that can come from that. But science has come a long way. but we're still doing a lot of interventions that have been consistent over the years and that have not changed so much. And that's where innovation and fresh thinking and new technologies and minimally invasive treatments, that's where all these things come into play and will hopefully continue to drive the field forward. I'd say in general, we've made a lot of progress, but we still have a ways to go.
I want to segue exactly to that point, talk about innovation here, because you are involved in a lot of innovation. But before, on the undiagnosed aneurysm, so how typically is somebody diagnosed with an aneurysm other than just random chance? So how do they figure out that there is one there?
Yeah, so oftentimes it is just random chance. Most aneurysms are asymptomatic, meaning the people just don't know. I mean, they're not having symptoms. I would say a lot of aneurysms are found incidentally because of a headache or some dizziness or some other event where a patient goes in to see their primary care doctor, or maybe they even come to the ER and they say, I had this symptoms, this headache, this nausea, this dizziness, or I felt imbalanced for a little bit, and they wind up getting some sort of pictures of the head and the brain, and an aneurysm is discovered. But it's pretty rare that those initial symptoms are actually related to the aneurysm.
Yeah, it's exactly how my brother's was discovered. He was hit in the head, and when they took him in to be just to have scans to make sure everything was okay, the hit in the head was, ironically, not a big deal. It was the aneurysm they discovered as a result of that. So it was a happy accident. And in his case, it was one that they knew they had to treat, but it was complex. So innovation. So you are involved, naturally in the field that you're in, it's obviously a field that would draw people that are interested in innovation and cutting edge. Neurosurgery by definition is at that cutting edge, but you talk a little bit about the things that you've done over time. You've spent time with industry working on the big company side. You're looking at startups and companies on the earlier stage of things through AngelMD and elsewhere. What are the things that really interest you from an innovation perspective?
I'd say the main things that interest me, I have an interest in advanced technology for the patients that I treat. I have an intellectual curiosity, and I think a lot of doctors do, about advancing the field and providing the best treatments or the most advanced treatments that we can. As you mentioned, I have worked with industry on a variety of levels. Neurosurgery and as well as other subspecialties, we are using very high technology and very sophisticated tools to do the types of surgeries that we do today, or the types of surgeries that we will be doing tomorrow. And those tools require a very extensive amount of testing, product iterations, input from clinicians about real world scenarios. So I've been involved in all of that, as well as, and that's for big companies as well as small companies. And I think the most exciting part of it for me is being able to provide input as an expert in the field for new technologies that will hopefully find their way into the operating room or into the angiography suite or into the ICU, and will really be a benefit to our patients. And I think it's a fascinating field and interacting with and working with the companies that are making all these wonderful tools has really been an important part of what I do and fascinating. It's an intellectually stimulating field to be in, and I love seeing new technology and helping to guide where it's going.
Are there any in particular that maybe you've been working on over the last year or so that you find interesting that you could talk about or not?
Yeah, so a lot of what I do is what's called endovascular techniques. So these are minimally invasive treatments where we're bringing very small catheters inside the body, potentially moving them along long distances inside the vessels to get to a certain target. And then once we're at the target, to do some sort of treatment. So a lot of the innovations or the testing I've been involved in or the trials I've been involved in are surrounding those sorts of technologies. And I can't speak specifically about some of the newer stuff, but it's geared towards that, or geared towards finding new minimally invasive ways of how we can treat aneurysms better or deal with the complications of ruptured aneurysms.
Love it. So why don't we finish with just a little bit on the personal side. So outside of, you know, a very hectic and demanding schedule, which I can imagine given all of these different roles, what are some of the things you like to do outside of work?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm fortunate to be in Southern California where the weather is often, often very pleasant, and allows me to be outside being, you know, going for a run or a jog by the beach, getting on a bike and getting a workout in. I just love outdoor activities and staying active from that standpoint. And if I'm not doing that, I'm reading about something. You know, in addition to reading about my field, I just like to stay fresh on all sorts of topics, be it within medicine or outside of medicine.
Cool. You still play music?
Not as much as I would like. I've definitely given up my dreams of being a rock star. Maybe one of these days I'll get back into that.
What was your instrument of choice? Was it guitar? Or?
Guitar, yes. I played the electric guitar, you know, did a whole high school band thing and
nice.
Thought that might continue into college, but...
That's cool. Have you ever met by chance a guy named Billy Cohn, who's down in Houston? He's now with J&J Innovation, but a cardiovascular surgeon.
No, I don't know him.
He's a piece of work. He's so, you know, much like really accomplished surgeons like you, he's a fantastic innovator. But what's really fun about him beyond all of his clinical work is he is a musician and a magician. And performs regularly with both. But we went out, I remember a number of years ago, he invited us to come out and see his band. It happened to be a jazz band. And so this is after dinner. And I mean, it's at least 9:30, 10 o'clock. And we go to this bar and it's hopping and he's up there playing and it's a lot of energy. And I mean, you know, I'm not an old guy, but at the same time, it's getting to be like midnight, 12:30, and he's still rolling away. And I remember like at 1 o'clock, he's like, all right, guys, I got to get to bed. I got surgery in the morning. And we're thinking, oh my gosh. I mean, this is just the type of person who can work, do surgery all day, do a dinner, go out and play with the band and is back at surgery the next day. It's just a lot of respect, but
that's fantastic.
He is a character. Well, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time on a Friday afternoon in particular and sharing a little bit of insight into the world of a MD, PhD in the neurosurgery world. Incredibly fascinating. I think most people don't have a clue what goes on in a world like yours. So it's neat to see a little glimpse of that and appreciate you sharing.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tobin.
Go to Innovation for Alpha for access to prior episode links, show notes, and other valuable resources. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any investment decisions, please consult with a professional. This show is copyrighted by Angel Indie Media, and written permission must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.